Now we are at episode 155, Scary Dad Podcast, the new and improved, however it may run, our quarantine cast, right?
Right. Like
all the fun stuff.
The world's making it almost difficult to find new business now, because everything is everything we try to avoid on this podcast as far as, you know, politics and shit like that, but...
That's all there is.
Everything has been politicized. It's unreal. You can't do anything without getting some kind of having to be divisive and take a side.
Would you have ever thought at any point in your life that wearing a mask, like, you're not supposed to wear masks into convenience stores. They'll shoot you. But now it's mandatory. Like, certain things get flipped on side, and it's such a Halloween buff. I'm like, you know what? I understand the arguments, and it's hot, dude.
Yeah.
But still, you get to wear a cool mask. Like, my wife got me a camouflage one. I'm like, sweet. Now you can't even see the bottom half of my face. It just blends into the background.
I actually don't have a problem of it at all, man. I do enjoy wearing the mask when I go to the store. It just people leave you alone. They don't bother you. It makes for very quick shopping trips.
I never had much of an entourage when I went to the store before, but. Well, cool. Well, kind of to continue the discussion from last time we did the movies that came out in 1980. So,
first, the old business.
This time we're going to do some of the albums that came out that year. There's a lot of stuff that came out in 1980. The thing is, it's 40 years ago, right? Like,
it's crazy to think about that.
That's painful to think about. But then some of the stuff has just been with you. You don't even realize, because sometimes it's. But yeah, like, you know, the Pretenders debut album came out in 1980. Against the Wind by Bob Seger.
Wow.
I honestly kind of thought that was a little bit older. I thought that was more of a, you know, 70s
song, right?
Survivor came out. the Rocky theme, Survivor. Def Leppard's first album, On Through the Night, came out in 1980.
Oh, wow.
Iron Maiden's first album came out in 1980. The self-titled Iron Maiden came out. Which, by the way, I just finished reading the autobiography of Bruce Dickinson, and that dude is a hoss, man.
Really?
In addition to being, like, the lead singer of one of the biggest rock bands that has ever been, he's also a commercial airline pilot.
Oh, wow.
He's a fencing champion. And it was a cool book, because basically, like, he's just interested in all kinds of stuff, right? Like, he's just fascinated by things, by life and gadgets and stuff. And he explained, like, because of this kind of singing he does, the operatic style, it takes a lot out of him, that he can't do drugs of any kind. Like, sleeping in an air-conditioned room can thrash out his voice, so he has to be careful about everything he does, or else he loses his paycheck. So he likes to drink beer, but that's about it. All of his other vices are hobbies.
Right.
But it was actually kind of refreshing to read a biopic, because recently we've watched the Queen one, you know, the Elton John one, you've seen the Doors, you know about all these, like, and the story's all the same. Like, the Johnny Cash one, it's the same story, like, crappy home life, you know, stratospheric rise to fame, you know, victim of your own hubris, cataclysmic crash, and then recovery, right? Bruce Dickinson didn't have all that. He's just, like, been kind of on an upward streak since day one.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it was nice. It was cool to read a book that's not just like, I'm a victim of my own crap.
Right. Yeah.
Where everybody else is like, man, pull yourself together, man. I would trade position. I'd trade places with you in a heartbeat. Oh, let me see here. Bad Reputation by Joan Jett. The Cure's first album, 17 Seconds, came out 1980. The Blues Brothers. Like, AC/DC's Back in Black, dude.
So Robert Smith is pushing like 60 right now, 60 plus.
Yeah, he's in his mid-60s probably. Because, right. I mean, they started when they were like teenagers.
Right, so let's say he was 20 years old when his album came out. He's pushing 60 right now. That's pretty damn crazy, man.
I hear something funny about the Cure. So Robert Smith married his high school sweetheart early on in the band, and they're still together.
Right.
Okay, so you look at the Cure, and you look at Robert, and even now, even in his 60s, he's still got the big hair and the makeup and the eyeliner and all of that, right? But if you think about like what their names are in the phone book, it's Bob and Mary Smith. Like, her name's Mary, so it's Bob and Mary Smith from you know,
basically the Beaver's parents.
So they could be completely incognito. Yep. That was one thing that Bruce Dickinson was talking about the first time he was doing commercial airline, like after he first got done, because he actually went to work for an airline. He did all of the training and stuff. He's a commercial pilot. But yeah, he's at an airport and he lands, and you know, it's like there's, because of the rules for flying, you can't fly too much, so you have to, like, you land, you have to take a nap, right. Like, you have to sleep for a period. So he lands his plane, and he's standing there at a waiting for a shuttle to come pick him up to take him to his hotel. He looks across the thing, he sees an Iron Maiden fan, like the jean jacket with the buttons on, the Iron Maiden shirt. The guy looks up at him and is like, you know, starts walking over to him, and he's like, excuse me. He's like, yeah. He's like, is this the shuttle to what's and what? He's like, no, that's the next platform down. He's like, he didn't recognize me, because I'm like, why would you think that that's the singer of Iron Maiden standing in a pilot's uniform?
Like, right.
He's like, no idea who he's talking to. He's like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, same thing. It's like, hi, you know, telemarketer. Hi, I'm trying to reach Bob and Mary Smith. They're like, this is he. You have no idea who you're talking to. All right, dude. Blizzard of Oz.
Nice.
Came out that year. Same in 1980s. Oingo Boingo. So, you know, that's Danny Elfman from all of the Tim Burton movies. And then Queen did the Flash Gordon soundtrack that same year.
Oh, okay.
So if you were buying records in 1980, man, you
had a good selection of vinyl. Yeah, you had a good selection of vinyl there.
Good stuff. But yeah, that's the old business going into it. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back for the new.
Okay.
Pillsbury Bundt Cakes. Fancy cakes made easy. Watch that ring of macaroon. Now you see it. Now you don't. But slice the Bundt cake and there's the macaroon inside. Chocolate macaroon is one of five Bundt brand ring cakes from Pillsbury. Cake, filling, and glaze mix all in one box. So you don't have to be a fancy baker to bake a fancy cake. Bundt Cakes from Pillsbury.
Clap hands, here comes chili. Hormel, the good time chili. Clap hands for Hormel chili now. Clap hands for Hormel flavor. Great taste, you're bound to favor. Hormel's the good time chili now.
All right, here we are back again. Mr. Gomez?
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Hey, you may have noticed, it's just unusual for me, I did pop a top tonight, because of course we're going to talk about a couple of deaths that we had recently. The first one we shall discuss is one Wilford Brimley, who was a huge part of us growing up. Everything from Cocoon to, of course, what both of us consider one of the movies that's close to being a perfect movie, The Thing. He had actually was making the rounds at horror conventions and stuff too at one point, so he was getting out there with the fans and everything. Wilford Brimley is someone that we even if you picked on him about his diabetes commercials, you knew who Wilford Brimley was, and he was a part of growing up. He was always there.
Yeah, and, well, he was the Quaker Oats spokesman too.
Right.
So if the thing came out in 82, and then he was doing Quaker Oats in 92, which is 28 years ago. But he was 80 what?
85. 85 when he passed away.
85. You know, so like he wore a lot of hats.
Yeah.
You know, like different people know him from different things.
Right. Yeah. He crosses genres, and a lot of people know him from a lot of stuff. And Cocoon is actually, I love that movie. I thought he was excellent in that movie also. Mm-hmm. It's a really good film.
Yeah. He's sorely missed, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and he held on for a long time, considering like he was the spokesman for diabetes.
Right.
And diabetes kills you when you're young.
Right.
So
he hung in there for a nice 85 years is a good run.
And he was also cool because, like, on Twitter and stuff, he would make fun of himself, and like people would make jokes about diabetes, and he would respond and like play along. So he wasn't just something like, he was an actor. He wasn't just he just looked like a grumpy old dude, but
right.
He was actually a pretty cool guy.
And of course, next up, let me find him right here. Which, of course, this one definitely hits home. I got Nightmare on Elm Street playing in the background. Got my Nightmare on Elm Street shirt on right now. John Saxon, star of a few really, really iconic movies, including, he has a ton of credits. He's been everywhere from television to film. But for me, Enter the Dragon, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Black Christmas, of course, are what I'll always remember John Saxon for.
Yes, very much. He's one of those, again, that you don't realize how much stuff he's in until they start running his list of credits.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, man.
Well, then you start to remember. I remember seeing him in that. I remember him being in that. You know, excellent
and
actor.
He had
a great presence.
He played good guys and bad guys equally well.
Right.
Like he was believable as a good guy and a bad guy. And sometimes people get typecast, and he kind of looks like a bad guy. You know, like,
right.
And he played enough bad guys that he could have easily gotten put into that. But nope, he played straight good guys as well. So,
we'll definitely drink one to John Saxon. He definitely will be sorely missed.
Yeah, one that just happened yesterday. Was Martin Birch.
Mm-hmm.
So he's. I don't know if you heard about him. He popped up late in the feeds last night. He was the producer. So we were just talking about Iron Maiden. He produced most of Iron Maiden's biggest albums.
Okay. Yes.
He also I'm just looking through here. He passed away yesterday at age 71. His cause of death hasn't been announced. But let's see. He did Jeff Beck, Whitesnake, Deep Purple, let's see, he did Blue Oyster Cult, Black Sabbath, Ronnie James Dio, let's see, Iron Maiden, Rainbow. I mean, he just did, like, so much. Like, if it's a heavy metal album, a British heavy metal album of that early 80s, he was involved in it somehow, if it was successful.
Right.
And, but yeah, so, rest in peace, man.
And, of course, we also recently lost one Regis Philbin, who died at the age of 88. John Saxon was 83, by the way. Regis Philbin, been on television forever, was also a game show host for a short time, but of course was the star of Regis and Kathy Lee. He had a very incredible personality. Everyone loved him. Even Paul Rubens did a little tribute to him on his Facebook page. It's another one that somebody had said the other day, I can't remember after which one died, but he said something to the effect of, wow, all our icons are dying. I'm like, dude, we're getting old. You know, it's not like these guys are dying after, short lives or, you know, suddenly. They're dying in their 80s and 90s. So we can expect to, unfortunately, go through this for a few more years for sure, where we're going to be losing a lot of our iconic celebrities.
Well, too, and I think right now the world's kind of more attuned to it. But, like, remember in 2016 when we just did the quick hits list and it took us 3 hours because so many people passed away?
Right.
But at the same time, there's a fame is defined a lot differently now. So there's a whole lot more people that are remember, you know, they're known for different things, that it's not just movies and TV, but you have, you know, quite a bit more, you're casting a broader net.
Right.
So, but yeah, there's gonna be some more, you know? Unfortunately. It's sad, but.
All right, moving on. Let's go to some happier news. Like, let's talk about a decapitation, why don't we? Hartford, Connecticut man recently was arrested by police when landlord Victor King called the police and said his roommate Jerry Thompson had been waving a samurai sword at him. The pair was arguing about Thompson's overdue rent, with King telling Thompson he had to move out if he couldn't pay. Following morning, police received calls from King's friends and said they hadn't heard from him and he couldn't get in touch with them, so they decided to go ahead and visit the property, and they found that Mr. King had been decapitated by Mr. Jerry Thompson. That's taking your fear of getting evicted a little bit too far.
So the tenant decapitated the landlord?
Yes. Yeah, 42-year-old Jerry Thompson decapitated his landlord. He's got a murder one charge and is being held on $2 million bond. So far he has declined representation. And I would love to see this guy try to defend himself on this one. But what I find weird is, you know, I see people with samurai swords all the time. You never see them where they're sharp enough to decapitate somebody.
But, I got a couple that are.
Yeah,
that
are. But,
yeah. Well, because, well, first of all, I don't collect. I mean, I do collect toys, but if I'm buying a weapon, I buy a weapon.
Right.
But also, like, on Thanksgiving, it's kind of become a family tradition now where we gather up all the pumpkins from Halloween. And have a samurai slaughter.
That's like, always fun. Me and the kids were actually talking about taking a sledgehammer or throwing a watermelon off the roof the other day. We had one over here. We started talking about Gallagher, and they had no idea who the hell I was talking about, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Alrighty, California. Elderly couple were hiking in the Lynch Canyon Regional Park in Solano County. Elderly couple, they're walking along and they happen upon a cow and a calf. Have you ever been charged by a bull?
I fortunately have not. I've seen it happen and it's frightening.
I have, and it's funny. I had a friend of mine, Damien. He stayed at his grandmother's all the time. We'd go over to pick him up, and to get to her house, you had to go through the cow pasture and everything. And there was one bull in particular that even if he couldn't get to you, he would attack your truck. And he wouldn't let you leave. He would butt your truck. He would do everything he could to try to get you to stop. He was a very angry bull. But I very rarely saw a cow attack. Cows usually are fairly docile. But apparently this elderly couple, they're walking along and happened upon a cow and its calf. And this cow decided it wasn't having anything of it. Began chasing the couple. The couple fell to the ground, were injured. They just so happened to have a news chopper that was passing by and saw this going on, and they got down and were able to shoo the cow away, and the people had to be airlifted out of this park after being attacked by a cow and its calf. And I'm picturing all this taking place, and just, how can you not laugh at a people rescued using a helicopter to divert some cows that are attacking an elderly couple?
Dude.
Crazy, you know, time, but, in the park.
But animals can be mean, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine. You're just like wandering around the park. Well, you remember whenever we did the thing on bears? It's like, yeah. You're just running a damn marathon, like la-da-da, I'm so gonna go get a soy latte after all this, and then rawr, and a bear just takes him out. Land shark, dude.
And in some good news, it has been. Did you ever watch the Child's Play remake?
I have not.
I watched it. It was okay. I didn't particularly care for it. Mainly just because I'm an asshole, and whenever something from my youth is, they try to remake it and change it. It pisses me. You know what the main reason it pisses me off is? Because whenever they do a remake like this, so far away from a classic movie, there's going to be a whole generation of people that when you say Child's Play, they don't think about the original. They're going to think about the remake. And that just annoys the shit out of me. Well, they there's been talk for a while that there's a Chucky TV series that's going to be coming out to the Sci-Fi Channel. And I like the Sci-Fi Channel series. I find they do a good job. I enjoy it Happy whenever they had Happy playing. But it has been announced, luckily, with the Chucky TV series that the voice of Chucky will be played by none other than Brad Dourif. So the original Chucky voice will be in the show. And Don Mancini is also involved in this project as well. So I'm actually looking forward to this.
I'll check that out. See, I don't dislike remakes on the idea of making a remake. I don't like it whenever you have a movie that is like pretty damn near perfect.
It holds well.
And they're like, well, let's remake it. Like, you know, like you say, like with Child's Play. Okay, fine. The demographics and the type of toys, and especially with drone technology and AI, you know, but I guess make a movie, call it Child's Play, you know, whatever. But whenever you're kicking a kickstand down and you're leaning on the legacy of the original to hold up your movie. Because if it was awesome enough and it could stand on its own, you'd call it something else, and then everybody'd be like, whoa, this is kind of like a revamped Child's Play. And you'd get that word of mouth organically, you know. Right. But the same thing with, like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. The thing about Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one was a straight-up horror movie. It was scary. There was nothing really funny about it at all, except for some of the dream effects, right? The second one was, it was kind of funny, but it wasn't really meaning to be. It was actually quite mean.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't start really being who he was until the third one. But the third one was so awesome. You know what I mean? It's like they're like, okay, here we found our formula. But then you go back and you're like, okay, well, let's make it all super dark and nasty. Like, Freddy was a freaking pedophile, dude.
Right, yeah.
Like, no. Like, you can kind of gloss over some of that. You can not gloss over it, but you can kind of be like, okay, you know, he got his ass burnt.
Right.
Right? Like, he's not a heroic character.
He's not a sympathetic character, for sure.
Yeah. But you're just like, okay, we're just going to take all the humor out and make it all dark. And it's like, well, I just don't really want to watch that, because now I'm just watching a story about a burnt pedophile, like, haunting people.
Right.
That kind of gives... I'm not real.
Well, you know, we were talking about John Saxon a little while ago. I read an article on Bloody Disgusting the other day, which if you get a chance, go check it out. But they revisit the treatment that John Saxon had came up with to make a prequel to Nightmare on Elm Street, where it talks about the, you know, when Freddy Krueger was just a child therapist and how everything came to be with him being caught molesting children and harming children and people taking revenge on him. I still think that would have been a great... That's where they should go. They should go ahead and make that prequel.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. You know, the things they can do with CGI to de-age someone, they could de-age Robert Englund and have him play the part. I mean, I'd be interested in seeing that for sure. Okay. Last but not least, I decided, you know, quarantine has kind of kept us away from a lot of friends and a lot of people that we love. So I decided to revisit and see how Will Greenlee's doing right now during the during the pandemic. And needless to say, Mr. Greenlee is still achieving things that we only dreamed we could possibly achieve. Okay, so the next couple of episodes, we're going to have a Greenlee in each one. All right, so...
Hit it, man.
This one today, title, Spaghetti Water Dispute Boils Over. Get it? You see the little pun that he put in there?
Hit it.
Okay. 40-year-old woman accused of pouring a pot of... I'm sorry, the husband actually poured a pot of spaghetti water on a 40-year-old woman. What could be considered a soggy case boiled over about 12:50 a.m. when Martin County Sheriff's deputies went to an unspecified address in Stuart, Florida. 40-year-old woman said her hubby returned home intoxicated. They started quarreling about signing divorce papers. She said her husband took a pot of water he set on the stove to boil spaghetti and poured it on her. And I want you to notice that I just got through saying this occurred at 12:50 a.m. Dude came home drunk and started cooking spaghetti at midnight. Okay, so took a pot of water, he set it on the stove to boil spaghetti and poured it on her, the report stated. Italian in origin, spaghetti is a thin, cylindrical pasta made with water and milled wheat. It is high in carbohydrates and often served with a sauce such as pesto, bolognese, or marinara. A thinner version of spaghetti is referred to as angel hair pasta, while a thicker version is linguine. Meatballs, comma, or balls of meat, comma, are a classic accompaniment to spaghetti. Spaghetti, while typically a food, you're going to love it. He goes totally greenly in this paragraph. Spaghetti, while typically a food, also is used to describe a subgenre of Western movies, the most critically acclaimed of which were three, Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, directed by the late Sergio Leone, with music by Ennio Morricone.
Now you know what spaghetti is in all of its forms.
Meanwhile, deputies noted the woman's shirt was dry and her jeans had some water spots. It's unclear whether her shirt had spaghetti straps. You get it? He just loves these little puns, man. Her husband, however, said his wife dumped the pot of water on him. He said the water wasn't warm, his shirt was wet, and there was water on the floors and kitchen countertops. The woman was jailed on a battery charge. She called in a false police report when she was actually the one dumping spaghetti water on her husband. And that's this week's Will Greenlee.
Well, now we know all about spaghetti.
In all forms, edible and entertainment-wise.
I think knowing about spaghetti is more important than knowing about the outcome of this case. Because...
But that's what I got this week for new business.
All right. Well, I got a new business.
Shoot.
Yeah. So today, the day we're recording, so this is going to come out tomorrow or the next day. So probably Tuesday, Wednesday, depending on how I can get to it tonight or not. Okay. So many of you know that I write books. I write stories. I have been working with getting some stuff published. Long story short, that book went live today. So Monday, August 10th, that book, it's been on pre-order for about a week, but it went live today, so I can actually track it. Do you have it in your hand?
Yes.
Okay. This is an independent release. I don't have a publishing house behind me. I don't have a marketing machine. I just have the communities that I've built. When I say that I've built, I've got the communities that like Facebook groups and friends and just literally one degree of separation. Like, hey man, buy my book. Those communities. So book went live this morning. Somewhere around noon, I clicked on it to see if I had any new reviews, and I noticed that my ranking at that time, I was the book was ranked 1,262,811th of Kindle books on the Kindle store.
Wow!
So I was in that 1.2 millionth position in sales rank. I was at the time 1015 in horror anthologies, 2207 in horror anthologies. It's one's the ebook and one's the paperback, and then 4407 in fiction anthologies. I thought I was doing pretty good. I thought I was like, dude, like nothing behind me. No, nothing other right. than just like, guys, please buy my book. At 2 o'clock today, I was 49,000th in paid Kindle store. So I jumped up a couple, you know, a million spots, basically a million and a half spots. I went from, 1015 to number 52 in horror anthologies, number 50 in horror anthologies for books, and 149 for fiction. And then while you were running the Will Greenlee I just refreshed my page, and as of, 8:36 p.m.? Where am I now? Dope. Number 38 in horror anthologies, 38,000th in paid Kindle store, 32 in horror anthologies, and 120. So I'm continuing to climb. And it's possible, which I would have never imagined it in a million years, but it's possible that I might have a new release that actually pops out at number one in some category or another. And if that's the case, then Amazon will start promoting my book for me.
Awesome.
So I thought I was doing really well at the 5,000th position. Now I'm like, okay, well, how far can I push this? And hey, for royalty's sake, I might only make, earn like $12, but I don't care because this is a pretty cool ride. But yeah, if you're listening to it right now, this show's coming out, like I said, either Tuesday or Wednesday. So this week, it will continue to be 99 cents. So go on Amazon, look for William Stewart, and the name of the book is The Moonlit Road. And buy it, read it, review it. Tell us what you think, because to me, this is awesome. And I've got another one coming out around Halloween, so I'm pretty jazzed, if you can't tell.
Well, I had to get the actual physical copy because I'm a big physical media guy, but definitely want to have you throw your John Hancock on it as soon as I see you again.
I certainly will, man. Well, cool. Let's take a break and come back and talk about the year that was.
Okay.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
There are no experts. You probably know as much about possession as most priests. Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
The one hope, the only hope, the Exorcist.
Yes, we are. Man, I'm so ready to eventually get one-on-one with you, dude, where we can actually be in the same room again.
I'm telling you, dude. Need to have just like a Zombievers on in the background or something equally goofy. Because, that's one thing I missed about just like we could have gone 21st century early on, but it was still just like, dude, I like jamming. I like showing up and
hanging out and having the
movie on in the background and sometimes getting distracted and laughing.
Oh, dude, no. I was going through some old VHSs the other night and I broke out Kentucky Fried Movie. Remember Kentucky Fried Movie?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's John Landis. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene in it where some people go to the movies and guess what the name of the movie is they're going to watch?
What's that?
See you next Wednesday.
Of course. I was about to say, like,
That's my new thing is like watching every John Landis movie I possibly can and finding where they say see you next Wednesday.
Let's start doing a release on Wednesday. That way you can say it at the end of every show. So you had a pretty good idea of some things we can talk about.
Yeah.
Like there's certain things. Like I remember I collected them all. I got most of them. But back whenever I was pretty serious into collecting comics, and everybody on all of the forums were always going after the first appearances and the key issues.
Right.
And I don't really care so much because first appearances usually it's like somebody's foot or a hand because it's like they haven't completely developed a character. You just know he's coming soon for the next, you know, the next issue. But even so, it's usually not their final form. Like it's like you don't see what they're actually going to look like till several appearances later or the character changes. I don't really care too much about spending a whole lot of money on, you know, a cameo or whatever. But one thing that I thought was interesting is I would collect all of the major comics that were out the month of my birth. So, you know, it's like Action Comics and Batman and, you know, Green Lantern and Spider-Man and the Hulk, and just pull up September 1975 and right. Look at that cover and then go look for them and then find them in better conditions or whatever. But I have a whole big old bunch of comics that came out in my birth month.
Okay.
That I thought was pretty neat. This is what was on the shelf whenever I emerged. So you had a good idea too.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the stuff that occurred the years we were born. My birthday just passed, of course, as you know. And I figured, you know, that would be a neat little thing. Just look, the year we were born, what was the world of horror like at that time? You know, what were we looking at? Some of the things I looked at is what movies came out that were significant in 1973, the year I was born. What kind of serial killers were running around back in 1973, the year I was born? And also, you know, one of the things I remember, one of the earliest things I remember about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as I've told you before, I saw it when I was way too young. And, you know, at the very beginning when they announced, you know, this is based on actual events. And if you notice, the year and the date that it says it occurred is like August 7th, 1973, which my birthday was August 3rd, 1973. And as a kid, I realized that. And, you know, they just said this actually happened, and this shit happened 5 days after my birthday. You know, it was just one of those things that as a child, it stuck out to me, you know.
Of course.
But, you know, I was doing some research on Texas Chainsaw Massacre earlier. You know, Tobe Hooper's work behind the... that film, it wasn't just a slasher movie. It actually had some cultural and political ideology behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if you can believe that. I mean, it's it's crazy reading about it. One of the things he says, you know, at the beginning where he says, you know, this is the film you're about to see is true. That was in response to, quote unquote, being lied to by the government about things that were going on all over the world, including Watergate, the 1973 oil crisis, and the massacres and atrocities in the Vietnam War. That opening where he says this is based on actual events, you know, while it's loosely based on Ed Gein, he was doing that to make a mockery of the political landscape and lying-ass politicians. I just thought that was fucking awesome, but I learned about that a little while ago. So I'm going to read some more up on the background of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which maybe we can do a Fresh Eyes on that also, because I don't think we've ever done Fresh Eyes on Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I don't think so.
We could maybe look at the original and then the 2006 remake, maybe. We can go ahead.
Maybe so.
But that year in movies, of course, there was a pretty cool movies that came out that year. It wasn't a huge year for horror, but there were some that definitely stood out. One being The Wicker Man. Came out in 1973, which is a pretty big movie. Another one that came out in 1973, which...
Let's talk about Wicker Man, dude.
Okay.
Wicker Man's awesome.
Yes. Yes, it is.
There's a lot... I mean, and... What's his name? Ari... who's the guy that does Hereditary? Ari Aster?
Yes.
So he did... He did Hereditary, and he did Midsommar.
Uh-huh.
All of that, like that entire, his entire style is Wicker Man.
Okay.
Apparently, and I haven't seen, I actually, because I'm kind of lame like this, I haven't seen either Midsommar or Hereditary. It's not because I don't want to, I just haven't had a chance to.
They're good movies. I highly recommend Hereditary especially. You need to check that one out.
But the thing about, like, if you watch The Wicker Man, because I've read some criticism on it, that it's like, oh, it's boring, everything's, you know. The whole point of The Wicker Man is that these people have gone thoroughly sideways in one aspect of their lives, which is their belief system.
Uh-huh.
but everything else is normal. So they're drinking at the pub, they're going to work, they're going to school, they're even going to church. Like, everything is normal.
Right.
And that's what is so frightening about it, is because there is this kind of cult-like psychosis that's overtaken the entire town, which, you know, if you haven't seen it since 1973, spoiler alert, it's bad news for the guy who shows up to the island to investigate the murder, and it was all a big setup. But the thing is, there's nothing particularly scary that happens in Wicker Man. There's no jump scares. There's nothing in it that's like, ooh, here's the big oogity boogity until the end. And then it's all the more terrifying because the dude's been dead since he showed up.
Right.
Like, they've just been messing with him to mess with him, really.
Right.
But there was never he was never getting out. He was hand chosen. But the thing that makes it so scary is how complicit and normal everybody in Wicker Man is. It's just like the horror is complete and thorough.
Right.
But it doesn't seem scary until you think about it. You have to think about it. You can't just like, if you just sit down and be like, hey, let's grab a pizza and watch The Wicker Man, you're going to kind of be disappointed because it's not that fun.
Right. Yes, yeah. It's a cerebral movie. One of the best quotes I've seen it being described is the Citizen Kane of horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has plenty of accolades given to it. It's considered one magazine said, Total Film Magazine considers it the sixth greatest British film of all time. And that's saying a lot for a horror movie that came out in 1973.
It's true. I've got the VHS up there. My Superpowers figures are standing up on it as a platform.
Yeah, so that was definitely one that stood out that came out in 1973. I haven't watched it in a long, long, long time. So it may be one that I might need to revisit here pretty soon. Just check it out. Another one that came out in 1973, which is a movie that actually I've seen so many times and actually have always enjoyed it. I have heard people say that they don't necessarily consider this a horror movie, but the original Westworld that came out in 1973 with Yul Brynner.
Oh, yeah.
That movie always creeped me out big time when I was a kid. It's one of those ones that used to come on every once in a while on cable. It wasn't on heavy rotation, but you definitely caught it every once in a while. But it's a great movie.
That movie was in those stack of movies that my dad made me watch whenever I was like 13, 14. And no complaints at all. Like that was an amazing period whenever he's like, here's all these great, you know, but Yul Brynner played heavily because he was in, you know, Magnificent Seven and stuff like that. So, dad's like, you know, of course Westworld goes on there because Westworld is like going to Disney World, but it's like,
creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool concept, and as AI continues to advance, it gets even, you know, like even closer to possible.
Right.
You know.
Well, I hear people talk about the HBO series all the time, and I'm like, you do realize there was a movie that came out, you know, called Westworld back in the day that is basically the same thing. It's what it's based on, basically. A lot of people don't know that Westworld exists. They're not familiar with the film, but that's one definitely that I remember watching many times. Okay, the other one that, 1973, those early 70s, late 60s were the middle of black exploitation, where all these just crazy movies just centered around blackness and Afrocentricity and everything were coming out. 1973 was they didn't have a lack of horror movies, where we had the introduction of Blackenstein, which was interesting, and the long-awaited sequel to, where's it at? Scream, Blackula, Scream, the sequel to the original Blackula movie. It was probably the most famous blaxploitation horror movie, definitely, was Blackula. I think
it's probably the most famous blaxploitation movie, period.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a big one. Everybody knows about that movie. But yeah, so it was a year for the blaxploitation movies, which are fun movies to watch. You know me, I like, one of the reasons I love independent film, a lot of people, you know, when I try to get them to watch an independent movie, they're like, oh, the special effects suck. It's cheaply done. The acting's terrible. I'm like, yeah, but it's so much fun. I mean, just watch how these kills go. Watch their use of comedy. Watch their use of timing. It's a really, really fun movie. And those blaxploitation movies were definitely fun. Another one that came out in 1973 was The Legend of Hell House. I'm not sure if you remember that one.
I don't think I've ever seen the movie. That was a Richard Matheson.
Roddy McDowell was in it. John Hughes was the director. That was a pretty good movie, definitely.
Well, I read Hell House by Richard Matheson. Matheson is a screenwriter. He did Hell House. He did What Dreams May Come. He did a whole lot of screenwriting, and he wrote the movie that they had Will Smith and the German Shepherd.
I Am Legend.
He wrote I Am Legend, and it's been turned into so many movies.
Yeah, Omega Man, a bunch of
Omega
stuff.
Man. Yeah. So I read a lot of Richard Matheson back in the day, and but I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
Okay. All right, moving on. Another one that came out, which honestly, I don't remember seeing this version of it, but I have seen the remake that I enjoy very much. But The Crazies by George Romero came out in 1973. A science fiction horror film written and directed by George Romero, stars Lane Carroll, Will McMillan, and Harold Wayne Jones as residents of a small American town that accidentally becomes infected by military biological weapon. That movie was remade. I got the DVD here, actually. I was thinking about watching it.
I've seen
it
the remake.
The remake's not bad. I actually enjoyed the remake a little bit, but I can't compare it to the original because I don't remember ever seeing it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen the original either.
So that's one I'm going to have to get a hold of and check it out. Another one that falls on this list. Once again, like I said, horror just spans many, many genres, and there was actually a grindhouse comedy horror film that came out in 1973 called Cannibal Girls, directed by Ivan Reitman and starring Eugene Levy. And I do believe this one is actually on Amazon Prime, so I plan on checking this one out just because it sounds like it's a fun movie. A couple were relaxing in a snowy forest near a small town in Ontario. It's set in Canada. That's one thing I noticed about this one is that it's a Canadian film. Suddenly, an axe-wielding female assailant kills the boyfriend, rips the girlfriend's shirt open, and puts a dab of blood between her breast. And next thing you know, just chaos ensues at that point. So I'm sure that I will find, once I watch this one, that, you know, considering it's called Cannibal Girls, it has influenced many, many B-movies that have come since then. Especially at Ivan Reitman joint, I can imagine that it did pretty well. So...
Of course.
Hope to check that one out. Another one that came out that year, which these movies used to, as a child, they used to kind of trip me out all the time, but Terror in the Wax Museum starring John Carradine came out in 1973, which those Wax Museum movies always kind of trip me out. This one is set in the 1890s in London. So I've never seen this one, but it might be worth a check out just to catch up on some older horror movies that came out back then. It had a decent reception as far as when it came out, but there's not a whole lot that I know about this particular film. And of course, last but not least, 1973 introduced us to The Exorcist.
Oh yeah.
A film that terrorized people for ages and ages, even to this day, considered one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
Which is funny because Exorcist never really did much for me.
Really? It's a cool movie. I enjoy the movie. It's trippy. But so many people consider The Exorcist to be the one movie that's the first movie that really scared the shit out of them. I've heard that from several people. That they put The Exorcist up there as one of the scariest movies they've ever seen. At this point, being that we've seen so many movies that delve into the paranormal, it's a good movie, definitely not the scariest that I've ever seen, but it's a good movie and it's a classic. I'm going to give it its props for sure.
The Exorcist. Sorry, you blinked out there for a second.
Yeah, The Exorcist did...
Okay. I mean, that's what I thought you said, but you blinked out for a second, and I had to make sure that you weren't talking about something else.
No, still talking about that. Still talking about that.
You've, you know, it happens. Whenever you're on the phone or on the internet, there are, unfortunately, problems sometimes.
So, yeah, so that's it for the films. Now, I did also see that 1973, which I'm very familiar with this case, and I'm sure you're very familiar with this case, but 1973, as a matter of fact, August 1973, marked for us the end of the Candyman killings by Dean Corll in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
It was August 8th, 1973 is when he was shot and killed by his accomplices.
That was a messed up situation.
Oh yeah, I actually so bad. I did the Heights Haunted Tour years ago. And that was the main thing that they spoke about on the tour was the Dean Corll murders, which I think we've talked about that on the podcast before.
Yeah, in our serial killers episode we talked about them.
Well, for those that don't know, Dean Corll was a psychopath that died in 1973. He abducted, raped, tortured, and murdered at least 28 teenage boys and young men between 1970 and 1973 in Houston, Texas. They referred to him as the Candyman because his family actually owned a candy business. And he was killed by one of his accomplices who finally got tired of being used by Dean Corll to obtain victims, and he decided to finally fight back. Was tired of having all his friends get killed by this man, so he finally fought back and shot him and killed him in the process while they were in the process of committing another murder. Crazy
that was
story,
and to think, like, there's all these just missing kids around, like, because he lived real close to a school.
Yeah,
so, and he just easy pickings, really. God. Yeah. And I remember, because I was a little kid, you know, like, the 1973, I was born in 75, my parents were horrified, like, you're never getting out of our sight for that very reason. I always didn't believe it until I grew up and was like, oh, the Candyman killer, huh? Wow.
But that's what we got for 1973. I can go ahead and end it there, brother.
Well, all right, man. Well, we're right up on an hour anyway, so
okay.
That was a pretty awesome show. Just kind of some of the throwback stuff that's been out in the world that you just don't think. I mean, again, you don't think about how long ago stuff was. You don't realize how relevant stuff was.
Right.
Rolling off some of those records from earlier is like, if you would have given me a dollar, I wouldn't have guessed the right year for half of those records. I would have thought either
they're
much
not older
or much newer. You know.
The Cure.
Well, like Back in Black, for example, I'm not a fan of AC/DC, but it's not because of AC/DC. It's because every jackwagon who thinks he's a heavy metal fan gets so excited when Back in Black comes on, and you're like, dude, that song's on like 18 times a day. How can you possibly be excited to hear Back in Black one more time? It's like anything Led Zeppelin does.
Right.
And maybe if you live in a different city where you've got more than two radio stations that play the same six songs all day, maybe your opinions will be different.
Right.
But if you're me, you're just like, Jesus, shush. But I would have guessed that Back in Black was a lot newer. I would have thought Back in Black, because AC/DC had already had a career with Bon Scott. Back in Black was Brian Johnson's first record.
Okay.
So I would have thought, you know, 83, 84... at least, but no, 1980, man.
Well, the Cure, I would have thought at least 1985, 84 with the first Cure album. That kind of tripped me out when you said the Cure's first album was 1980.
And they were active in the 70s too. They were clubbing and trying to push through and get something done. So, and the crazy thing, dude, if you look at like certain ones of these bands, I think it was probably Def Leppard. Which had the reasons, because their guitar player died and they had a whole bunch of stuff. But Def Leppard kind of started this trend, because when Hysteria came out, it was a big hit. But they didn't have a new one out until like 91 or 90. It was 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So like 91 between records. And then all of a sudden it was weird, because bands would start waiting like a year, two, 3 years between their big, you know, releasing records.
Right.
Whereas if you look at some of these bands of the 80s, like if you look at Iron Maiden, they had a new record every year. And you think about the writing schedule, the rehearsal schedule, and the tour schedule that they're on, in order to put out a new record every single year, how hard these guys, like, these business are bigger than a 40-hour-a-week job, you know?
Right.
The Cure, if you look at The Cure, man, they were putting out an album every, like, 9 months for years, all the way through the 80s. Like, every 9 months, there was a new Cure record, and they were touring. It's like, these guys meant it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they earned every little bit of reputation that they got, because they were killing it, you know? It's amazing. Sometimes you're like, oh, you know, I made one single and now I can just retire and buy a yacht. It's like, I don't, that's not how that works. that's why you have to get your cred, you know, you have to do your thing. But no, man, it's been a great show, and we're going to go ahead and end there. Come like us on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on the YouTube that I don't do that much anymore, or I never really did. But yeah, fun stuff. And next week we'll talk about my birthday.
Yes, sir.
So, we'll talk to you later on.
Later.
Keep it scary.
Later.